This boy is fueled
like fire.
So start melting, ladies, because the boy is hotter than hot. He's hot, hot, hot.
All right, are we ready?
Yeah, I'm ready whenever you are. So part two is still the 17th of June, and the next Jimmy Doan show could very well come from Hangar Dogs.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh!
Yes, Jimmy is doing another drive, as he did last year. You might want to go back in the archives. It was... That was one of the very popular shows that they had.
Place your bets, everybody. Place your bets.
That's it. No, Jimmy is doing the drive with Grandma, 96 years old. She just had her birthday.
Is he going to make it?
Is he going to make it? Right. Well, the thing is, Jimmy's going to drive, mind you.
Is Grandma going to make it? 3-1 odds on Grandma.
That's right. Well, we're taking her wheelchair. And but anyway, we're going to drive at $4 gasoline through the flood-torn central United States tornado alley and so forth. Which Grandma, of course, you know, Grandma, her channel that is automatic is the Weather Channel.
Right.
And she is one of these people that has the Grandma's toe.
Right.
Which tells the weather in advance, far in advance. And Farmer's Almanac people ought to hire her. The point is, we're going to be driving out there to that neck of the woods. Jimmy has to go to Utah for a little shindig for a day or two. And then we're going to drive up to...
Aren't you going out there for the inauguration of the George Sutherland Library?
Yes, that is exactly right. For the inauguration, for the ribbon cutting on the wing of the new Utah State University. It's
practically our favorite justice.
Right.
Very libertarian in his rulings, though. You'll find he's quite liberal when it comes to his original...
Well, he was a politician.
Right.
I mean, he was in the Senate for several years, and he was in the House.
Right.
And so, but I mean, he did, and he was a, you know, this was when, remember now, he came to Utah before it was a state.
Right.
And this was back when the railroads, you know, Promontory Point, all that stuff, that was all just being done. And so he was a railroad guy, and anything for the railroads, and of course, this was back before there was any income tax, so all the United States government was funded at that point by tariffs. So he was a tariff guy. So, I mean, this, it all made sense, You'd think off the top of your head that this, you know, where is this guy coming from? But you have to look at it in the context of the times. And Utah became a state like in 1898 or 6 or 7 or something.
And it was also one of the stalwart four horsemen that resisted so much of Roosevelt's New Deal.
Right. That's why we love him. That is why I'm so, you know, we have a hero in an ancestor, an actual bloodline ancestor. So anyway, they're going to dedicate an entire wing of this brand new library to his name, and I'm going to go out there as an heir, as a whatever you want to call it. Yeah, and
you gave it away, Jimmy. I was keeping it a secret.
Yeah, whatever. But anyway, so I'm going to go out there for that. Then we're going to drive up to Idaho. So anyway, it'll be probably 6,000 miles on the old Lincoln, and yeah, with Grandma, I'm going to be with three ladies. Two of the biological...
Sorry, it's 6 miles to the gallon. It's 1,000 gallons.
No. That car gets 22 miles to the gallon.
Oh. Yeah, it does.
It gets 22 miles to the gallon. I figured out it's going to be about $1,200 worth of gas, 300 gallons, plus or minus. And anyway, but with the two carbon-based ladies and then one silicon-based, who they call her Angelina, Andrea, whatever it is our, what do you call it, GPS.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
right,
she comes up. Turn right now.
Oh, I thought you meant silicone-based.
No, I wish. I wish. Actually, I've been looking for...
You're picking up one of the cousins or something.
Well, what I was thinking... Well, don't, you know, don't laugh. Actually, I do have a niece. We don't want to go too far on this, but who is silicone-enhanced? anyway, but the deal is, yeah, I was looking for some of the major cities out there, looking for the Escorts Unlimited. to find out what the rates were like, and you know, small town, small rates. I don't know. Anyway, but I thought I'd hit some of the barbecue joints and stuff. But the problem is with Grandma in the car, there's no telling where we're going to go and so forth. But anyway, the idea is at least to spend a night at Hangar Dogs and do a show. And that hopefully will be in about 10 days, 2 weeks or so.
You could take him out garage saling with you.
Well, I plan on hitting at least one garage sale.
Right.
You know, while I'm doing this. I hit him last weekend and I got spit. So,
oh, really?
Well, you know, again, too many people are on eBay and
yeah.
It's, you know, some of the stuff I was looking at something, you know, me, I'm an Apple IIe guy and there was a part that I wanted on eBay. The damn thing went for more than retail, for God's sakes. Special thing went for $300-$500 for this damn thing that used to be, I don't know, not much, not that,
right.
But it's a rare part, you know, rare is expensive, so I didn't get it. I bid up to $21 and lost it. So anyway, the next thing that I wanted to mention, which we wanted to bring in our counselor on this, was the Supreme Court thing. Gitmo, what's the
story? Yeah, man, we had a good ruling.
We did.
Yes, we
now,
did.
I thought it was interesting that our justices voted against it.
Yeah, well, when you say "are," you're talking about the conservative ones, I think, right?
Quote, conservative, yeah, Roberts.
Yeah, I mean, to me, honestly, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, I find a lot of
now
rulings...
for those of you in other countries. Remember now, what we're talking about here is that since Gitmo, since Guantanamo was made a jail cell for enemy combatants, they've not had a right to habeas corpus, and
right.
So they've been basically held. Uncharged, you know, tortured, waterboarded, the whole nine yards. There's 200 or 300 of them down there, towel heads or whatever it is down there, and they.
If you're under arrest.
Yeah, and they, you know, with their
with no charges to confess.
So anyway, the deal was that the Supreme Court said no, sorry, we understand that Gitmo may not technically be part of the United States, but. You got to give these guys, you know, a fair trial.
Yeah,
fair.
It's just ridiculous. Like, they tried to make up a whole new category, enemy combatants, as if all the great minds at the Geneva Convention had forgotten about a category, or it just wasn't in existence at that point. I mean, look, you know, prisoner of war pretty much covers it, and you pretty much have to grant them basic rights. And
well, you don't have to, but you're supposed to.
You're pretty much supposed to, right? I mean, you don't have to do anything. That's why
well,
they
I mean,
call
look,
it
it's
war.
Not like 17. What are, you know, if you complain, you know, you don't get your Red Cross rations or whatever.
Right. Well, you know, and I mean, the point is though is that the Supreme Court stepped in and said, Bush, you know, nice try, but you know, swing again.
Swing again.
And so
swing.
Yeah. So you know, it's one for the good guys here. I did see, I mean, you have anything else on that?
The only thing that I'm with you on this one. I know that Neil Bortz and some of these other people thought that they were, you know, that they shouldn't have any rights and so forth. And you know, you give them, now that we've, you know, you tried to kill us, yeah, all of us, you now get a fair trial. And, you know, this is going to open up the floodgates for, you know, trivial, you know, the Attorney's Relief Act or whatever. I don't know how they're going to get paid exactly. Maybe Osama's going to send them a check. It's Osama, right? Not Obama. That's right. Yeah, it's Osama is going to send him a check. But the deal is, as I've always said, and this is even more basic than that, if you give up all of you, if you trash the Constitution to save the United States, you might as well just right. give it up. I mean, that's the whole thing. And we are better than people that want to, or that are totalitarian thugs. And if we're not, if we're going to be a totalitarian, if we're going to be Machiavellian about this whole thing, means justifies the ends, the whole deal, and then I'm saying hang it up. I'm not interested in that. I'm not interested in a totalitarian society to save a totalitarian, free society.
Because it's still subject to the same flaw, which is you're subject to the rule of some dude, some monarch, some person.
Well, not only that, what happens is it goes down the food chain. And as you know, then you're subject to the whim of, what's her name, England or whatever, you know, who wants to, you know, show her tits at you or whatever, or you know, or, well, which is okay. No, well, you know, that, what's her name, the girl that they arrested her for abuse at, was she at Abu Ghraib or whatever it was that, there was a couple of people that they, quote, tortured prisoners or whatever.
And
her name was England. Believe it or not, that's all I remember.
Yeah, no, I forgot all that.
Okay, whatever. The point is, though, that, what's the point?
The point was that
if you lose your freedoms,
right.
if you give up, you know, if we had to destroy the village to save it. I mean, I'm just not interested in that. And I, when I think about it, the underlying thing. People are up here at some level of abstraction about whether you should tweak somebody's nose or whatever it is, but it's more basic than that. Either you have a constitution and you follow it, or you don't. And if you don't, then, you know, all bets are off. And we're in a, and as I say, it goes down the food chain to where here locally, for instance, you've got inspectors that can, you know, or somebody that comes up to your yard and says, I heard you're mistreating your dog. And here's a guy who has the full power and authority of the known gun held universe to shoot your ass.
Yeah.
You know, and they're bullies. These people, you know, they were the kids that, I don't know, maybe they had too much acne in school or something, but now they're, you know, they're little inspectorettes or something like that, but they got a badge. When I look at it, you think about the totalitarian societies. You see the movies about this all the time where the soldiers march in full battle gear. And I mean, they're just doing their job. But I mean, when you get a whole ton of these guys, I mean, that's their livelihood. That's their living. And of course, they feed off each other. It's like we have up here. I think I might have mentioned this before. I mentioned in our last podcast about the sting operation they did with the emergency vehicles. Of course, they've now expanded it to the DUI checks and the and just general stopping you on the street. They line up, you know, 10 or a dozen cars, or maybe they'll do a radar check with 10 or a dozen cop cars or something like that. And they did a DUI check up the road here, for instance, where they stopped 93 people, didn't find one single DUI, but they stopped and ticketed 93 people. I mean, that was a good day's work. I mean, the fact is, if they can't get their money through the general fund, they just go out and get it. And what are you going to do? I mean, you know, if you give them any lip, you are arrested for interfering with the police. Somebody, and of course, these guys are all dressed up in, you know, badges and guns and everything. And it reminds me, I was watching TV yesterday where they had some, it's called Dallas SWAT or Detroit SWAT or something like that, a reality thing where they track these guys. And they're in these big, you know, Escalade black, you know, tinted window SUVs with eight guys in them, you know, and they're all dressed to the nines. They're bulletproof everything. They got, you know, hoods on.
Because it's a dangerous neighborhood.
Dangerous neighborhood. So they came into this neighborhood and they beat the shit out of this house. You know, they came in, knocked the door down. They hauled out two or three people, literally two or three, put them on the lawn, sat them down on the lawn with the little straps, you know, behind their back. The, what do you call it? The little
zippy
straps, you know, whatever it is. They sat down there. And then they, of course, the film crew went in there and they literally tore the houses apart because they said, well, sometimes they stash the money in the wall. You know, here's a place that the wall's been replastered over and we think there's money or drugs in here and so forth. And of course, I'm wondering, you know, if you go to buy in one of those houses, what do the people take down the wall or something to give you your junk or I don't know. Anyway, they went through there and what they found was they found a plastic wrapper that looked like it might have at some time been wrapped around some money. That's all they found. They literally destroyed these two houses. And then they walked outside and let these guys go that they had, you know, had been sitting on the lawn for 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever it is. And then as they walked and they said, you know, cause they didn't find anything, can't charge them. And, they asked them, they said, well, you know, how was it? And they said, well, we did a good job. We showed the neighborhood that we're on top of things here and they won't do this again. And I'm thinking, won't do what again?
Yeah.
won't. So,
I mean, this is what is
in a totalitarian society. And I mean, this is on TV and people applaud this.
Right.
As a good thing. We're just doing, boy, these guys, these are our boys in black doing a fine job. Boy, I'm so glad they're out there beating the crap out of these guys.
Well, it's getting stricter and stricter.
I mean, it is unbelievable. And it's accelerating. That's the part that's scary.
Yeah.
And I was,
well, go ahead.
Well, I was just saying that the, you know, we've talked here on the Jimmy Doan Show about, you know, where the hell do we go from here? And I mean,
here's a story. I'll tell you one that I found in the last couple of weeks. This woman, a mother, she has a 6-year-old child and I think some other kids, a couple other kids. She puts the 6-year-old goes over to a friend's house to spend the night. And the mom has a babysitter there who is, like somebody she knows to watch the other kids. Well, at some point during the night, the 6-year-old came home from her sleepover.
Right.
Okay. Now, the mom was out partying.
Right.
Didn't know anything about this. 6-year-old comes home, babysitter asleep on the couch. Doesn't know the 6-year-old comes home either.
Doesn't know that she left. No, the babysitter's at the sleepover house.
No. Babysitter is at mom's house with the other kids.
Okay.
Okay. Mom has like 3 kids. Okay.
Okay.
So the oldest kid is 6-year-old. Goes to the sleepover.
Right.
During the night, 6-year-old comes back home.
Right.
Like, I guess the sleepover person, you know, decided to take kids home or whatever. Took the 6-year-old home. and I guess didn't wake up the babysitter and tell the babysitter that that this 6-year-old was home.
Right, just shoved her in the door.
Right.
You know, whatever.
Fire breaks out. Babysitter wakes up, saves the kids he knows about.
Right.
Doesn't save the 6-year-old.
Right.
6-year-old dies.
Ooh.
Mom, who was out at the party, doesn't know anything about this, thinks her 6-year-old was at a sleepover, now charged man two.
Really?
Yeah. The mom's charged with negligent homicide.
Mens rea?
Yeah, no, gone.
Gone.
Gone. Mom is charged with negligent homicide on her own child because of events that she didn't even know about.
And had no control over.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Act of God being the fire and unknown events, you know, being the return of her 6-year-old and the babysitter not noticing the 6-year-old there.
And so the question, of course, the question then arises, what about the mother over at the sleepover who dropped the 6-year-old off? What is she charged with anything?
Not as far as I know.
I mean, you would think if there was a link.
Right. It would be that person.
And that's pretty tenuous.
Oh, totally.
I mean, that's like bogus.
She knew the fire was going to break out?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
You know,
right.
And of course, okay, well, you know, what did she, like you said, she didn't, somehow the babysitter wasn't notified, child was brought home. But I mean, I guess if you see the child walk in the front door, you know, you might assume some contact has been made with the child and whatever
right,
adult's
there.
Right,
it's a 6-year-old. Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
You know?
And so, shall we follow, is there any way to follow up on this to find out?
I'll try. I mean, this is brand new. It was a couple weeks ago, so.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's just scary. I mean, you gotta think, what do these prosecutors think? Why do they,
here's
a mother who has lost.
Right.
Her 6-year-old.
Right.
She is devastated.
Right.
Devastated.
But they're gonna teach her, man.
Huh?
They're gonna teach her.
Yeah, and so they're gonna take away. Now, the other question is, what about the two kids that the baby's?
Oh, yeah, no, I'm sure they're gone.
They're gone.
Foster care.
Foster care, boom, gone. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Unfit mother.
Right.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, I mean, and this is Atlanta. I mean, you know, and I'll give you another one here. You probably saw, you might have seen R. Kelly's trial finally came out.
Yes.
Not guilty.
Not guilty, totally. It was a fairly short deliberation.
Yeah, yeah, like an hour and a half or something.
Right. And the reason was?
The reason was.
Of course, the evidence was what? The video.
Right, they had a video of him like having sex with this girl,
13-year-old.
Well, you know, you don't know because of course, you know, she's not carded on the video or anything. and so what the prosecutor did was they said, well, look, you know, we know it's this girl, and so we're going to prosecute you for sleeping with her or whatever. The girl herself said it wasn't her.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I mean, you'd think that would be enough right there to make the prosecution quit.
Right.
No.
No.
No, they're going for it anyway. They had several of her family members testify, and a few of them did not recognize the girl on the video.
Right. Nobody did.
Well, no, I think a couple of family members said, yeah, that could be her, or yeah, that's
okay.
Her.
Okay. What I read was that basically there was lots of discrepancy as to who this might be.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, if some of the family's not recognizing it, look, if the victim herself is saying it's not me.
Well, of course, that's, you know, I can see where.
But I mean, to me, that's your victim. That's who you're supposed to be protecting inside.
Right. But as we've talked about before, that goes right out the window.
Right. Yeah.
Because I'm not going to press charges, apparently does not hold weight anymore.
What we are going
to press charges.
They're
going to
protect future girls from R. Kelly, even though this one didn't want to be protected.
Right.
They're going to protect other people who don't want to be protected.
Right.
And so, but the prosecutor had the nerve to, at the end of this, which doesn't surprise me a bit, because this happens all the time, to say, well, you know, you can see that these cases are very difficult to prosecute, and we need tougher laws because...
Tougher laws.
You know, we can't do it because, I mean, the prosecutor is still convinced that he's guilty.
Right.
Even though the jury said he's not guilty.
Right.
And... They're always like that.
Well,
I mean,
maybe this was the same guy that prosecuted OJ because, you know, OJ was guilty. Let's face it, got off. So, I mean, that happens.
Well, I mean, it does, but I can tell you that I've never heard the prosecutor after the not guilty verdict come back say, oh, well, I guess they're not guilty. I mean, you know.
No, I've never heard that. No, in fact, They never have. I mean, that was one of the most egregious ones, of course, was those child molestation ones what's her name? The investigative reporter for Wall Street Journal, Dorothy Rabinowitz, wrote around so often. There was where they convicted and sent to jail, like the whole town. And you know, one by one, of course, they got on appeal. And I think there's one or two of them still in jail. But I mean, it was on its face. It was so bogus. And the prosecutor kept saying, no, it just makes perfect sense. I mean, when you read what the evidence was, I mean, it was like, you know, box cutter, razor knife shoved up the vagina of an 8-year-old girl, but no damage. I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. I'm sorry. Yeah. You know, wait a minute. You know, must have
he was very careful because he was a professional.
Yeah, right.
Oh,
my God. You know, you just unbelievable. So anyway, but what they it is interesting to watch this stuff. And I don't have the I don't think I've got the one here yet. Let me just see if I got it. There was one that I saw, and this never fails, where they once they pass a law, you know, laws breed laws. I mean, it's like they're like rabbits, for God's sakes. You pass one and you get 10 more. And that's always called tightening up or beefing up. And I think that they're going to that's what they call it. You know, we're going to enhance the enforcement provisions. The operative syllable, of course, is force. So I was just trying to see if I got it. Nope, don't have it. Anyway, so we'll move on. You got anything next? I've got the Massachusetts model. I got an editorial from the New York Times, from the commie New York Times.
Okay, go with that.
This was a stunning. We've talked about this before. I can't remember. It was when Massachusetts passed universal health care. And, of course, Mitt Romney had a little problem because he signed it. And they said this is a model for the entire United States. And what they did in Massachusetts is they've mandated that if you don't have health insurance, they're going to come out and get your money. Basically, you don't have any choice. You have to pay either to the state. If you don't get private, quote, private health insurance, then the state will basically come and take a certain amount of money and put it in a pot for insurance or whatever it is. So they had apparently like 600,000 in Massachusetts. I don't know.
Smoke it in a pot.
Right. So I don't know what the population of Massachusetts is off the top of my head, but they had 600,000, which I'm guessing the population is probably 6 or 7 million, 10%, whatever it is, didn't have health insurance. So since they passed this law 6, 8, 10 months ago, whatever it was, they apparently signed up about 350,000. There's still another 300,000 or so that are not a quote under the universal plan or whatever. So they're going to, they want to tighten it up, obviously. Do you have to understand that they can come and arrest you if you don't have health insurance in Massachusetts? What I love this about, of course, and so the New York Times comes out an editorial on June 16th, yesterday, whatever it is, and says the Massachusetts model is a model of just as perfect. This is what we want. This is the finest thing known to mankind. And yet, if you read a little down here, it says, critics, opponents of the new entitlement programs are watching closely, were accurate when they say that coverage is hardly universal if 300,000 people still don't have insurance. But the plan is still in its early days, and enrollment has grown faster than expected. The problem, of course, is a lot of the people who are enrolling in the plan can't find a physician because there's not enough physicians with the sudden influx of patients. Anyway, the real test will come later this year when higher penalties for those who fail to get coverage will kick in and see whether the coverage can really be made mandatory without sparking political resistance. Yeah, how about a riot? So, but the point is that here's the deal. Let me just see if I can read it. Oh, yeah. The chief criticism, however, is that costs have risen faster than the original projections, forcing the state to raise its spending estimates for the current fiscal year from $472 million to $625 million and from $725 million to $869 million for the next year. The shortfall occurred mainly because the state underestimated the number of uninsured residents and how fast low-income, yada, 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 whatever. The point is, it's a failure. I mean, it's a total failure. In the last two paragraphs of the editorial saying how great this thing is, what it happens is this is the same thing that happened with Medicare. I remember, again, I've talked about this once before. In 1965, 66, whatever it is, whenever they passed the Medicare, they projected that it would cost $9 billion by 1990 or 1995 or whatever it was. In that year, I was watching C-SPAN, and of course, at that time, it was not $9 billion, but $90 billion. It was 10 times over what they had projected. And so I called up the guy at C-SPAN, one of the senators up there that was on C-SPAN. I said, you know, if you had known that it was going to be, you know, if you had said in 1966 when you voted for this thing, gosh, in 1990, it'd be 90. But first of all, would you think it would have gotten passed? And the answer is, well, yeah, we'd have made it. We'd have gotten through. And it's still worth it. It's still fine. You know, it's like these prosecutors, you know. It's still fine. Perfect. And I'm thinking, no way, Jose, if you had leveled with the people, the same thing happened with the recent prescription Medicare plan. In order to get it passed, they had to say it was only going to cost $400 million. And everybody knew there was twice that. Everybody, this was something that was passed like 6, 8 months ago. Everybody knew. And it reminds me once again of one of our famous lawgivers here in Florida, Lawton Childs, may Satan rest his soul. Because he was the guy who stood up in 19, I think it was 96 or 86, I forget, when he was in the Senate, and when they had the balanced budget amendment, they had to balance the budget. I guess it was 95. Had to balance the budget by law. Grahams, Rudman, Holling, whatever it is. He put a slapped a piece of paper on the front of the budget that says, for purposes of this budget, we deem it to be balanced. Now, it wasn't. It was out of balance by, you know, $200 million. But they put a piece of, one slip, simple piece of paper, and just said, we pretend that this budget.
I can't believe that the challenge to that in the courts wasn't, you know.
Well, again, I'm sitting here looking, speaking of challenges to the courts, I'm sitting here, look, something I cut out of the paper here. This is from an insurance company. I didn't realize that, Woodrow Wilson was on the $100,000 gold note, which, of course, Woodrow Wilson was probably the second or third worst president we ever had. But it says on here, this says on this, and I need to find out the rulings on this. It says there, this is to certify that there is on deposit in the Treasury of the United States of America, payable to the bearer on demand as authorized by law, $100,000 in gold coin. It's a gold certificate right here. I've got a picture of one. And I'm wondering, when they passed the, said that they weren't going to do that anymore in 1934-35 and Roosevelt, I wonder how they got that through the courts, how they abrogated those contracts. When you have, I mean, I've got a $10 gold note here that says there's been deposited, you know, payable to the bearer on demand, the United States Treasury. And I would like to find out, because I know that they did take it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, no, I can do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's probably has something to do with the creation of the Federal Reserve System and all that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it may. I mean, it may very well, but I'm just surprised because a contract is a contract. I mean, it says right here.
Yeah.
You know, and it's signed by the secretary. I mean, it doesn't, there's no out on this. There's nothing
exception
that says,
there.
Oh, by the way, yeah, it doesn't say, oh, except for, you know, it does say, I will say this, it says, on this particular one, it says payable to the bearer on demand as authorized by law.
Uh-huh.
So maybe, but now the other ones don't. The other ones that I have don't say that. That just says payable to bearer on demand, so I'll have to see.
Uh-huh.
So that's the next three-prong digression. What's next? Anything you got, Curtis?
Only thing I got left is
I want to do a whiteboard for the city commission here. I'm going to go down to the city commission meeting, I think, next week if I'm not on the road.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take a couple things down there. One thing I'm going to do is take my checkbook down there and say that even though I've got some checks left in it, there's no money, and they want to put all these assessments, where they're going to get it. And so I would do is a whiteboard examination of where money comes from. And they don't realize that all of their money comes from capital. It comes from the money that we have our disposable part of their income, not
our. It comes from those rich people, man.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, okay, fine. So anyway, but I've also got some wands that I'm going to take down there. Did I show you the wand?
Yeah, I love the wands.
Yeah, they're little LED wands. When you click them on, and wave them, they do different colors. Because they want to just change everything. I figure they can just wave the wand and make the homeless go away. Or not be homeless.
Right.
The only thing I got left is Tim Russert.
Oh, right. Yes. Boy, I'll tell you. And I was the first one to say this, and it's funny because this is, it's on some of the blogs, but you haven't seen it in the media. You'd think this guy was God. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm here to let me tell you something. One thing I did learn. Jake Fuller here, who was our conservative cartoonist here in Gainesville, was a great guy, really neat. He really had some great cartoons. The Sun fired him. I guess it was a cost-cutting move. He was the only conservative, quote, slash libertarian kind of guy, and he did a daily cartoon. And he got a lot of flack for it here in you know, the communist center of Gainesville, whatever it is, liberal, you know, People's Republic of Gainesville. So the deal is that I asked him one time if he wanted to go to a party with me. He says, no. He says, I don't go to those parties because those are the people I skewer. I mean, you know, I can't be friends with those people. And I'm thinking about Tim Russert, and he was friends with everybody. He was a Washington insider, the ultimate insider. And when you look and you see who it was that lauded him, it was all of these people. Let me see if I've got it here. I had it up here someplace.
I saw that was the longest running show in the history of television, 60 years.
Meet the Press.
Meet the Press. Yeah, I remember in the old days when I was a kid, and I wanted to watch Howdy Doody, for God's sakes. It pissed me off. that kind of stuff was on. My dad would watch that stuff. I cut out the thing here where he said, lost it, who lauded him. And it was Harry Reid and all these other people said he has a great interview. You'd have thought this guy was some kind of Hollywood, some president of the United States. I mean, he was on 24/7. I have not seen that kind of, I don't think that Britney would get that kind of coverage. What's her name did when she died? Anna Nicole.
Right.
But other than that, I mean, he was, and you look at who loved this guy. It was the people, you know, he was a hard interview. He was not. He was the wishy-washy. I stopped watching Meet the Press. You know, they said he was a very penetrating, he wasn't, obviously wasn't Larry King. But I'll tell you, He did not. I thought every time I'd watch that, and he'd ask a question to some of these guys, and I would sit in my mind, well, why don't you ask him thus and so? And the reason is, he didn't want to offend him. I'm telling you.
I think that's as good as the questions he could answer.
I understand that. It was as good as you could get away with. But if you're friends with those, and of course I don't know if they might not have come on. If you really nail their ass, they're not going to show up. And I would imagine when you look at the people who have never been on, they're people who probably would, give him a run for his money. I'd have to find out if Ron Paul was ever on there, for instance. Although Ron Paul was not.
Yeah, he was. I saw him.
Yeah, but he was terrible.
He
writes well, but boy, I mean, in person and in speeches, and he sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, he just does. That's all. Anyway, I thought it was really over the top. You see, when the news media has one of their own die, boy, I mean, it's stunning. It's like the Academy Awards.
Well, and I'll tell you another place, and there's another place you see this kind of thing that I see it all the time, and this, I'm taking a great risk saying this here, but have you noticed that whenever these days a police officer dies?
Yes.
It has become a parade event.
Honest to God, yes, it is.
Let me put it this way. They closed down the streets in Tiberias the other day. I mean, they closed down the street.
The street.
They closed down 441, and they literally paraded like 100 police cars.
Well, let me tell you.
I mean,
if you ever wanted to rob a bank,
that would be the time to do it.
The first thing you do is shoot a cop.
Right. Wait for the funeral.
And then rob the bank.
And if you get a good one, you clear them out for 3 or 4 counties.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and that's terrible, but it's, you know, the thing is that it's out of control. I mean, I'm sorry, you know, as you know, great as hero citizens and whatever they are, whatever.
Well, let me. It's funny you should say that because they are now anymore. Having here in Gainesville, the firefighters pension fund has gone crazy because we have almost as many retirees in the fire department as we have people. No, seriously, literally, there are. It's a two. It was 10 to 1 or 20 to 1 25 years ago. It is now 2 to 1. And so these people are retired, and what happened is they've got the pension, and what happened was the city, I guess it was the firefighter, or whatever, the city, I guess, that pays the city firefighters, as part of the pension, as an adjunct, an addition, they said, I'll tell you what we're going to do, we'll pay part of your health care. In fact, we'll pay, you know, like 90% of it. Now, no guarantees. This may change in the future, but you've got your regular pension, but tell you what we're going to do. This year, we'll give you, we'll pay 90%. Well, that's been going on for like a dozen years. This year, they ran out of money. The city ran out of money, and they wanted to reduce it to 80 or 70% or something like that of the pickup. You'd have thought that we were going to go out and slay all the pensioners. I went down to the meeting, and I mean, they were, all the pensioners were there saying, we made a contract. Well, it's funny because they were talking to both sides of the road. I fought for 30 years, as a firefighter, and I was disabled, and I'm not asking for anything, but I'm asking for this. And I thought this was a contract. Well, the contract was, it ain't a contract. They laid it out. It was funny because the staff person for once came up and said, look, every year when they signed on to this thing to have the health insurance this way, we put a letter in front of them saying, this is not guaranteed. Do you understand? And they signed it. Well, guess what? This is one of those classic.
That's my money.
Well, this is a classic case of, and I, of course, I went down there and I said to him, I said, I feel for you and everything. I said, but you do understand that's my money you're talking about. And I was, I had to make a hasty retreat out of that room because I didn't want to get, jumped by all the ex-fire people, whatever it was. But they came away with just the sob stories from hell. And I thought, well, life sucks. I mean, let me put it this way. If life were only that tough life is tough for a lot of people, but that's what happens, and you're in a dangerous job. I mean, you got paid when you're going there, you took it voluntarily. And so you got a pension and they told you up front that your health care was going to be, maybe not, it's up to you. We all know that health care costs have gone through the ceiling. Mine have. And now you're asking me to pay more for you. God love you. I'm tapped out is, my thinking on it was basically, I got no more money. Sorry. Life sucks. Deal with it. Get on with it. So. And of course, health insurance is not health care. So that's the other thing. And one guy was down there saying, well, you know, and he was in a wheelchair. He says, you know, if you take away my insurance, then, you know, my kidney transplant won't be paid for by the state or whoever's going to pay for it, $200,000. And I got up there and I said, you know, if I have to have a kidney transplant, I have to write a check. I mean, I wish somebody would pick up part of the piece on this. So anyway, it didn't make any
impression. For the children, Jimmy.
Yeah, I was down, you know, well, they know me as a libertarian kind of guy.
That's all I got.
Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, but I got nothing.
You got nothing. You're drawing. Yeah, engineer's drawing a blank.
I did like the one that guy who there's some big hoopla about. He filmed his girlfriend doing the Wii Fitness.
Oh right, and the same name or something.
Yeah, somebody else in there.
I'm not sure. I want to be the veterinarian on this, but I did see in I guess it was up in Washington State someplace where the zoo performed the first reverse vasectomy on a horse.
Oh,
I'm not sure I'd want to have been the doctor on that one.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. It's in Washington D.C. Scientists at the Smithsonian Institution National Zoo have revealed that they reversed a vasectomy on an endangered horse to allow it to reproduce naturally. That must have been a hell of an operation. I'm not sure. And then, of course, you know, we're in the space thing. You saw where they're putting up a new telescope to hunt for aliens.
Oh, yeah?
And they have also found a whole bunch of new Earth-like planets. They're finding new planets every day. And
right.
you know, you're asking, well, I wonder if there's any life out there. Hello. I mean, you do the math. They're finding, literally, they are finding out that every star that they can, you know, perform the wobble on
right.
Has a planet or two or right. three or four or nine or ten or who knows how many.
Right.
And I'm thinking, what are the odds? You know, I mean, there's like a trillion galaxies, okay.
Right.
Each one has a trillion
yeah,
stars.
Exactly.
And each one, you know, has a trillion. I'm thinking, what are the odds? Hey, any life out there? I don't know. I don't know. It's, you know. But they've also found that. So that's it.
Oh. All right, well, rocking. Thanks to Red Rock guys for writing in. Again,
yeah.
Fans and stuff.
Yep.
And
come on back.
I got 45 minutes to bid on this thing on eBay. We just made it. Look at that. Nobody bought that K&E slide rule. Damn.
Alrighty, guys. We'll see you next time.
See ya. Thanks, thanks. Thank you, Jack Rhodes, for calling in. And I'm looking forward to seeing the Hanger Dog.
Yeehaw.
My abacus collection hasn't sold.
Yeah. Wait on you, baby.
Trying on you. I'm gonna do something to you now. Get your mojo working. Yeah, yeah, oh, yeah.